This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, March 21st, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. KUAF is supported by All My Treasures, a flea market and antique mall on Highway 16 East in Fayetteville, serving interior designers, collectors, and dealers for 28 years with memorabilia, antiques, furniture, and more. Open 9 to 6 daily with art and furniture consignment now available. 575-0250 for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we learn about new standardized public education testing that will be tried in schools as part of the new Common Core curriculum.
Plus, we have our weekly conversation with Michael Tilley from the City Wire. Little Chief performs a song off their new album inside our studio and more. But first, the University of Arkansas System Board of Trustees yesterday gave its approval for the creation of a new online-only university. It's called eVersity. UA System President Dr. Donald Bobbitt argues the online education won't cannibalize student enrollment at existing brick-and-mortar universities.
My expectation and our experience not only of us but of others in other states is that these completely online students who tried college and perhaps weren't successful for a variety of reasons, they're not going to come to a traditional campus. And so our initial assumption is, and I think it's based upon some sound evidence, is that these will be net new students that we will attract.
But Bobbitt does acknowledge that there will be some overlap in online courses already offered by existing UA campuses. He also says funding for the online university won't affect appropriations for the U of A system's physical campuses scattered across the state.
We were very frank with the trustees. We have no intention of submitting the student semester credit hours that we generate at the eVersity to the state for formula funding. That means it's the amount of money the state is spending on higher ed right now and is distributed to each of the campuses, not just those at the U of A system, but across the state. We really don't have an interest in that. If we can't make it go with tuition dollars that we're going to charge, then we're not going to be able to offer that program, or we'll have to close the doors.
Bobbitt says the program may also pursue unconventional semesters, perhaps offering as many as 8 different 6-week semesters a year. The proposal passed without dissent, and classes are expected to begin in the fall of 2015.
Parole absconders in Arkansas have just more than a week to take advantage of an amnesty program before facing tougher penalties. More than 2,000 absconders who have failed to report to parole officers are evading capture. The state's Department of Community Correction is offering an amnesty program through the end of March that will bring absconders back into the parole system without further penalties. Deputy Director Dina Tyler says the state is ready to find those who don't take advantage of the amnesty period.
It's called Special Response Team, and it's made up of highly trained officers. We have 21 of them, and their caseload consists of absconders. And they're starting with the highest fires first, the ones we think potentially pose the largest threat to public safety. And since they've been on the ground, January 13th, they have caught 93 absconders who we felt were a threat, and all of them have been locked up.
Tyler says there are typically two reasons for people to abscond.
It comes time to go to the officer, and they think, I can't pay my $35 this month, so I'm going to skip this. And I'll go in next month, and then I'll get caught up. And the next month rolls around, and they don't have the supervision fees again, so again they skip. And before they know it, they've been skipping for 3 or 4 months. Or perhaps they've been doing real well, and they went to some party or some situation, and they smoked marijuana, and they're worried they're going to fail a drug test.
Tyler says this is the first time an amnesty period has been offered, and it's only being implemented under the circumstances of changing parole laws. Legislators last year toughened parole laws after a repeat absconder was accused of committing a murder. At last check, about 140 of the 2,000 absconders have voluntarily reported during the amnesty period.
The Arkansas Departments of Health and Education are coordinating to launch a project that aims to educate everyone in the state about preventions and treatments of heat-related illness. Greg Brown is the Emergency Medical Services Section Chief for the Arkansas Department of Health. He says during the past 5 years, individuals in the state have been transported to hospitals because of heat-related illness during sports activities, ROTC, or banned practices.
And I think that was one of the driving factors behind this program, is that it's not just about football players, as many people kind of think. It's really much broader than that. It's anybody that is participating in outdoor activity for a prolonged period of time in hot, humid conditions, where there are not many breaks, where they're not hydrated, then anybody, regardless of age, could succumb to exertional heat illness.
Starting this month, thousands of packets, including heat safety instructional material, will be distributed to school districts across the state.
New regional unemployment numbers released this morning spell mixed fortunes for the economies in the area. The January unemployment rate in Northwest Arkansas was pegged at 5.9%. While that represents a decrease of 0.4 points from January of 2013, it's an increase of 0.8 from December. However, the area's labor force has grown by about 2,300 people year over year. The picture is slightly different in the Fort Smith metro area. While the January unemployment rate of 7.8% was a decline of nearly 1.5 points from a year ago, it represents a slight increase from December. Meanwhile, the overall workforce in the Fort Smith area shrank by roughly 2,000 people year over year.
A U of A official will be testifying before a congressional subcommittee next week. According to the university, Charles Robinson, Vice Chancellor for Diversity and Community, has been invited to testify Tuesday regarding funding for educational spending. He will appear before the House Committee on Appropriations Subcommittee on Labor, Health, and Human Services, Education, and Related Services. Robinson will ask the committee to increase funding for a series of programs for low-income and underrepresented students, veterans, and students with disabilities.
Drivers in Springdale should expect some street closures this weekend. According to the Springdale Police Department, ongoing improvements to Johnson Road have necessitated periodic road closures to accommodate construction. The first of those closures will occur from 7 a.m. tomorrow through 10 p.m. Sunday. The closure will affect Johnson Road between Don Tyson Parkway and Chapman Avenue. While the street will be closed to through traffic, residents living in the area will be able to access homes from Don Tyson Parkway.
And there will be a partial street closure next week in Fayetteville. On Monday and Tuesday, the southbound lane of Arkansas Avenue near the University of Arkansas campus will be closed as needed during daytime hours. According to the city, the closure between Dixon and Maple Streets is necessary to conduct median improvements, which include planting new trees and adding irrigation to the median island.
The John Brown University women's basketball team will face the top-seeded team in the NAIA National Championship Tournament tonight. JBU won its first round game against Lyon College 70-53 last night in Frankfort, Kentucky. Tonight, in the round of 16, JBU faces Vanguard University from California, the number one team in the country, at 8:45.
Expect mostly cloudy skies this evening with a 30% chance of showers and an overnight low of 40 in northwest Arkansas. A 40% chance of showers and a low of 47 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Saturday, mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of afternoon showers in northwest Arkansas and a 40% chance of showers in the Arkansas River Valley with a high around 58 degrees. Tomorrow evening, cloudy with a 40% chance of showers, lows from 34 to 41.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers business, politics, culture, and much more for the entire KUAF listening area. Hello, welcome.
Well, hello, welcome, and it's nice to be here at a Friday. I love Fridays.
Fridays are great. It's a weekend, basically.
Yep. Yes.
Well, as you do every Friday, we give you a call and you tell us a little bit about some of the things the City Wire has covered this week. Something that's happened in our area up here in Northwest Arkansas that you guys have covered is the new convenience store that Walmart has opened.
Yep, Walmart to go. And this thing has been amazing in terms of the traffic that it's driven. And it shows that there's a lot of interest and that we're getting traffic from all over the world, not just the state, region, or country, but a lot of folks around the world are interested in this. And, you know, you might say, well, it's just a dang convenience store, big deal. Well, it's I think Walmart has talked so much about expanding into different areas of the retail sector that I think people are really taking them serious. And what's at stake here is Walmart estimates there are about $415 billion in what's called the quick trip consumer spend, and they only have about 10% of that market share, so they want some more. And so they've launched this convenience store in Bentonville, and it opened actually last weekend, but they had a grand opening this Wednesday. It's about a 5,000-square-foot convenience store. It is supplied by store number 100, the Supercenter there, just nearby in Bentonville. And a lot of people are watching. You know, they're obviously the Walmart supplier market is watching, but there are also a lot of regional – a lot of people are watching. There's a lot of regional convenience store owners are watching. You know, small mom-and-pop, so to speak, the suppliers, the distributors to some of these small convenience stores, because you know, Walmart has a lot of economic power, and if they really choose to focus in and are committed to this convenience store concept, it, you know, the folks like Casey's and Quick Trip and those, you know, they'll be able to survive and compete, but it's going to put some pressure on the down market players, so to speak.
Well, it's definitely an interesting development. It'll be something to watch, something you guys have been watching. You've at the CityWire, you've had a couple of startups to watch this year, and you have a couple of updates on some of those.
Yes. We launched earlier this year five startups to watch there in Northwest Arkansas, and we had an update on three of them this week, Oh Baby Foods, EchoVet, and DataRank. Now, the other companies are Overwatch and Silicon Solar Solutions, but this week we've updated on these three. Next week we'll update on the other two. But Oh Baby Foods, it's a company owned primarily by Fran Free, and she picked up here in early March. She picked up 25 new stores for her all natural baby food. So her sales have grown a little over around 180% between February and March. So for an upstart, that's a great start for her. EchoVet, this is a company, they have veterans build furniture, handcrafted wood furniture, and they're trying to get in Sam's Club stores. They're also talking to, some of the other furniture companies to try to get those lines going. But, you know, this is one of those, it's, you know, they're focused on using veterans to come back and to make, you know, good, solid furniture. And so, another interesting company. And then DataRank, this is a company that takes all of that data that's out there, that big data, that social media information, and pulls it together for companies and tries to make sense of it. And they're growing. They just picked up FootJoy, which is a golf industry-related company. They're up to about 10 full-time employees. So, you know, interesting times for some of these companies. And, you know, we're not saying any of these companies will be the next big employer in Northwest Arkansas, but then again, we're not saying they won't be. So it's nice to watch these companies grow. And one of the things we hear common from all of these companies is the challenge of finding to help them grow. As they grow, sometimes they grow, you know, just in a month, they'll double the size, or, you know, it's just amazing growth. And their struggle is finding people to help them manage that growth and make sure that, you know, they don't grow so much that it you know, kind of collapses in on them. So it's interesting to watch. We're going to continue to watch them through the year, and I hope your listeners will check in and read about our updates.
Yes, always happy to hear about startups doing well in our area.
Right.
In Fort Smith, I know that there are some possible renovations that might be happening to help create some jobs there.
Right. It's not necessarily a startup, but a company called Fort Smith, their FSM Redevelopment Partners. Now, this is the same company that took the old Phoenix Village Mall area and turned it into something. They're looking at almost a complete renovation of the Fien Hills Country Club. Strip it down to the concrete and steel, about a $20 million project, and, you know, add meeting space, add, you know, thousands of square feet. And it recently passed the Fort Smith Planning Commission by 9-0 because it had to have a special planning and zoning district approval. And so it did that. But there have been a few citizens or a few residents of the Fiena Hills area that have opposed it, which is interesting because this has been in process for a long time. And here at the last minute, a few folks have showed up to oppose it. And some of the board members, this goes before the Fort Smith Board of Directors on April the 1st. There are, what we're hearing at the CityWire, there are a few board members that, you know, are being pressured to vote against it. So this will be interesting to watch. It's, you know, for the most part, it's an exciting development. Putting $20 million into a country club that struggled to make it, could be a unique model. Troon Management, which manages golf courses all over the country and all over Europe, would manage the golf course part and the country club also. But so we'll see how the board approaches this. In Fort Smith, where big development projects have been rare. It's going to be hard to believe that they'll shoot down a $20 million project.
Well, speaking of a million-dollar project, I want to ask you about the 188th. They've got a several-million-dollar facility that's coming to them?
Right, $12.5 million facility. This was announced a couple of days ago. And, what's interesting about this is, we know that the 188th lost its fighter mission. That was announced late 2012. And then in September of this year, those A-10, those Thunderbolt fighter planes, began leaving. And there are only five of those left now at the 188th Fighter Wing Base here in Fort Smith. But the commander, Colonel Anderson, Colonel Mark Anderson has reported that the Air Force has approved a $12.5 million facility. Apparently, Colonel Anderson and some other Air Force folks and folks with the Arkansas Air National Guard are hoping to create what's called an ISR, which stands for Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance, a center of excellence in Fort Smith. It'd be the only one of its kind, according to Colonel Anderson, in the military, and it would go along with the new mission. When the 180th picked up an intelligence mission, it's the ISR mission, Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance. So these are the folks that handle the drones or deal with the intelligence that comes from the drone. So, maybe this, there's kind of a, there was a little bit of a concern. We lost the 188, does the base stay active? Does it stay viable? So if this goes through, maybe this kind of gives another important mission to the 188 and hopefully secures its presence here in Fort Smith.
Well, plenty of things to look forward to, and always thank you so much for sharing your insight.
You are welcome. Have a good weekend.
You too. That was Michael Tilley in Fort Smith. He is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers business, politics, culture, and much more for the entire listening area.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. I've got some new music from Tommy Castro and the Painkillers and Dave Keys. Also, Billy Branch, Gina Cecilia, Andy Cohen, Big George Jackson, and more. Again, that's the Generic Blue Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This spring, new standardized public education testing will be tried in Arkansas schools as part of the new Common Core curriculum. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, 1 million students across 18 states, including Arkansas, will participate in the Next Generation Assessment.
PARCC, P-A-R-C-C, stands for Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, what educators refer to as the Next Generation Assessment System. 45 states have adopted curriculum and assessments under the new Common Core standards, approved in Arkansas by the Board of Education in 2010. Arkansas is among 18 PARCC states which are developing high-quality computer-based tests in reading, writing, and mathematics aligned to rigorous standards designed to prepare students for success in college and careers. Dr. Megan Witanski's Assistant Commissioner of Learning Services in the Arkansas Department of Education.
We are going to be monitoring and implementing a field test. And districts had the option several months ago to make a decision whether they wanted to opt in to participate in the field test. And the field test that is being provided by PARCC will help us to analyze what our future assessment items are based on the responses that we see from Arkansas students. So the field test actually happens each year, but it is normally embedded within our current state mandated assessment.
Field test participation is a random sample of districts conducted by the testing company.
And after districts opted in, district superintendents made the decision that they wanted to participate in the field test, the assessment company actually contacts the district directly from the assessment company to the district superintendent by letter, and they notify them of which each particular grades and or classrooms would participate. And no class and or grade level that's participating in any of our schools in Arkansas participate in both of the subject area assessments. They either participate in the English language assessment or they participate in the mathematics assessment. And in addition to that, they also notified district superintendents in terms of what that mode of delivery would look like.
Districts who opted into the field test were randomly selected to participate and were provided the mode of delivery through either online or paper pencil assessments.
One of the things that is new for us in terms of Arkansas students in online assessments is that we have not yet participated in a statewide assessment. And it's interesting because most of the states across the United States already participate in online state-mandated assessments. So we are looking forward to that transition. But in that transition, we also know that to be able to access the assessments, that our students need the appropriate tools to be able to do that. And so Dr. Kimbrell gave a directive several years ago encouraging district leaders to be mindful of the time that we are in as educators in the state of Arkansas and the time that our students are in. They are digital natives, and they come to school equipped with some of these skills, having experienced them at home and or in other settings. And we want to make sure that we are keeping up with those times. And so we have districts who have gone forth and purchased different types of options for their students depending on what their needs are. And that varies across the state depending on what superintendents felt like was most appropriate for them.
Desktops, laptops, and tablets paid for in part by the American Recovery Act funding plus state, federal, and local education money. A contract assessment company will deliver the content to individual schools.
Field test results are not provided back to the school district as they have not been provided in the past. It actually goes to inform the assessment to let us know what areas do we need to improve upon with the assessment, what modifications do we need to make, and in terms of looking at the individual assessment question and answers is also important.
In the coming years, the Arkansas augmented benchmark exams and end-of-course exams all transition to next generation assessments. Melody Morgans, Arkansas Department of Education's Director of Student Assessment, who was unavailable to comment for this report, will evaluate the field testing.
So Ms. Morgan will be working after we conclude the field test, along with our assessment team and our leadership team, and also on the end of the assessment company, they will be evaluating it from their standpoint, but we will be evaluating it here on a state level to make determinations on what our next steps need to be. And field test, again, will be used to better inform what those next generation assessments will look like. And that's important for us to know this year versus next year when it's actually in the operational year. We want to make sure that we have a full understanding of what those issues are that we need to improve and or things that we need to expand upon before we actually begin the operational year.
PARC deployment was funded through a $186 million four-year grant from the U.S. Department of Education's Race to the Top assessment competition. Field testing is taking place in two stages in Arkansas, beginning March 24th through April 11th. The performance-based assessment component will feature writing in English language arts and multi-step real-world problem solving in math. The second phase begins May 6th and runs through June 6th. We'll test reading comprehension and conceptual understanding in math. The state's colleges and universities have agreed to utilize the results of the PARC assessment to determine whether the student will be eligible to enroll in credit-bearing courses or engage in remedial study. 46 states and District of Columbia have adopted the new Common Core standards, and these states are aligning the next generation assessments to measure higher order skills outlined in the new standards, such as critical thinking, communicating effectively, and problem solving. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit arkansased.org and search for PARC. That's PARCC.
It is Friday, March 21st, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Spring break, spring break, spring break, spring break.
Woo! If only I got one.
I know, me too. But I still love the idea.
Right.
And so we're going to talk about some things you can do around here, and we're going to talk about some things all next week that you can go see if you happen to be on spring break next week, or can make a little note and save it for later.
Okay. Where are we starting?
We're going to start with Saturday.
Okay.
And something cool called Sanborn Fire Maps.
I have no idea what that is.
Okay. Well, Robert Rousey, who is the curator of education at the Rogers Historical Museum, is going to speak about this at 2 o'clock on Saturday at Hobbs State Park.
I should go.
You should go. They're very cool. They started in, let's see, 1890s. Well, the first map of Rogers was published in 1896. And they were insurance maps. But you can go back and look at them and look at the key to them, and you can see what kind of building. I'm making all these little gestures you can't see, guys. What kind of building it was, how many stories it was, what it was built out of, what was housed there. So you can essentially walk through a community.
So it's, I mean, it's in historical.
That year. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's sort of like, do you remember the first version of Grand Theft Auto, where
sure.
everything was flat? No, she doesn't remember that. You can just sort of walk through a community by looking at this map. It's like Google Maps, only flat.
See, it sounds like Walking Dead to me.
Okay, well, I don't watch Walking Dead, but it's cool, and he's going to tell you all about it. So you can go and have a little vacation in 1896. How can that be
all
bad?
Right.
And it's free.
Even better.
Or, all day Saturday, you can go to Crystal Bridges, you can pick up a bingo card, and you can play Art Museum Bingo.
That sounds fun. Walking through the galleries.
And when you're done, you get a prize. From noon to three, there's string painting, which sounds really messy but fun. There's a family tour at one on Saturday. And at two, Stone Lion Puppet Theater from Kansas City is doing Stella Luna, which is about little bats.
Luna, moon.
Mm-hmm. I like little bats. At the Fayetteville Public Library, there's an art mobile that starts tomorrow. And in Eureka Springs, tomorrow is the 24th annual Kite Festival.
At Turpentine Creek?
With all sorts of fun and music by Brick Fields. And the Kite Festival part is free. So go on vacation, even if it's just for a little tiny piece of time.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm Margaret John Hoyt. Join me Saturday for Alban Berg's Wozzeck, broadcast live from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera. Met music director James Levine conducts this searing masterpiece, a work he has championed for 40 years. And two beloved stars take on their roles for the first time. Baritone Thomas Hampson is the title character, a tormented soldier struggling to make sense of the world's injustice and brutality. And soprano Deborah Voigt is Marie, Wozzeck's volatile mistress, whose infidelity drives him to the point of no return. The riveting drama also stars Simon O'Neill, Peter Hoare, and Clive Bailey. Don't miss Berg's Wozzeck this Saturday, live on the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera International Radio Network.
The Met Opera will begin this Saturday at noon on 91.3 FM.
More than 100 names are engraved on the memorial wall of the Arkansas Fallen Firefighters Memorial, which will be dedicated tomorrow. Keisha Nenda from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock visited the site on the state capitol grounds to learn more about what it took to make it a reality.
The water will come out right there and be part of the fountain. Isn't it lovely?
The 50 by 70 foot circular memorial features four bronze firefighters with the fountain flowing underneath. Three are holding fire hoses, while the fourth is treating a wounded child. Retired Little Rock firefighter Johnny Reeb says it's a tribute to those who answered the call and did not return to their families.
So you start out in the center with the old volunteer, and we call that old leather lungs. And old leather lungs, and you go around in the counterclockwise, and you wind up with a firefighter paramedic. And you have a wildland firefighter and a modern firefighter. So it shows the involvement of the firefighting responsibilities and the different equipment that's used.
Reap, who is the chairman of the Arkansas Fallen Firefighters Memorial, says incorporating a fountain is symbolic.
Of course, firefighting uses lots of water, so it's a natural blend. Having the nozzles flow and the fountain had soothing sound. So the architect saw that drawing and he said, I'm gonna make this a fountain. So it was so easy to make that decision.
Reap says it took 28 years to raise money to build the $1.2 million memorial. What's most important, he says, are the 104 names engraved on the memorial wall. Relatives of many of those who lost their lives are expected at Saturday's dedication.
We hope to have a big day where the families will be seated on the amphitheater, and it'll be a way to say to the families, the people of Arkansas have not forgotten the sacrifice of your family member. This memorial is for their memory. If we didn't engrave their names will be forgotten in 5, 10, or maybe 20 years. So this is about an eternal appreciation for their service and sacrifice.
Michael Barron from MENA recently visited the memorial for the first time and found his comrade's name. Paul Keener died fighting a wildfire on April 24, 1984.
I got acquainted with him a couple of weeks before that happened. Great guy. Didn't know him very well, know his family more now, but he worked for U.S. Forest Service. He and another guy, James Frizzell, is somewhere on this. They were running the dozer, and they were overrun by fire. Just happened. Everybody thought they was going to go back to the house and have supper that night, and he and the other guy didn't. They were in their 30s.
The memorial will also be the place for children to learn about fire safety. Tyler Champion is a third grader at Westwood Elementary School in the West Arkansas town of Greenwood. He says he wants to be a firefighter one day himself and is already sharing tips on how to prevent fires.
One, never start a fire, never play with matches, never play with lighters. This is including parents and kids. And please do not smoke. Be smoke-free. And please do not start a fire when it's very windy and it's on just grass. Don't do that in the woods because it can start a wildfire. I want to save people from fires.
While fire engines are an iconic image, Reap says they decided not to include one in the memorial.
The fire truck is a component, but the people are the heart and soul of the firefighting. If that captain doesn't say, let's go in and make a search, make sure no one's in there, doesn't matter if you've got a $500,000 fire truck out there, it's the people who care about the other people who are in danger. That's the element that we bring. Firefighters treat every man and woman like a king or a queen. The homeless person doesn't have to fear. They'll be coming in there.
He says the more than 100 Arkansas firefighters whose names are included in the memorial died doing what they loved. But their names and sacrifices will be forever honored at the Arkansas Fallen Firefighters Memorial. In Little Rock, I'm Keisha Nanda.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's been a busy year for Little Chief. When we first met the band in early 2013, the group was using a gift from an anonymous donor to create its first EP. Since that time, Little Chief has performed across the country and used a successful Kickstarter campaign to record a full-length album. The new record, titled Lion's Den, was released last week. One thing that has changed for the band is its lineup. One member has since departed the group, and two more musicians have joined, now making them a five-piece. Last week, four of those band members, Matt Cooper, Andrew Myers, Isaac Foley, and John Lewis Anderson, stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio. During our conversation, Matt discussed the band's new configuration.
It's been a year of expanding and growing and kind of stepping out of our comfort zones. First, Ellie Turner, she was with us. She actually recorded on the new album. and she was a doll and really helped us out and sang on that record. But she is no longer with us as a band member, so we're quite sad to see her leave, but definitely for the best. And yeah, we added, in substitute for Ellie, we picked up Mr. Isaac Foley, and he's been really useful playing keyboard and organ for us, and he even hits the some of Ellie's notes, which is some of them, yeah, and it's a good time. And then since last time we've also added, he's kind of become a crucial member, but John Lewis Anderson on bass. I think we added him maybe a month after our last interview, mm-hmm. so he's been with us for almost the whole year. So
yeah, I came in towards the beginning of summer.
Yeah.
And how did you guys all know each other?
Well, Andrew and I were roommates.
Okay.
And so I was used to Little Chief practicing in our apartment. And I was always like, oh, man, these guys are so cool. And then Andrew was like, hey, we're looking for a bass player. And I was like, that needs to be me.
He didn't even have a – did you even have a bass amp or anything?
I didn't have a bass amp. And
yeah.
And so the deal was if I got a bass amp, I could join the band. And so I called my parents up, and I was like, I need
Here's
a bass amp to be in this awesome band. And they were like, okay, well, I guess you can do that.
And there you go. The rest is history.
Yeah.
Here we are. Now, you guys toured last year.
We did.
And then in December, you had a Kickstarter fund
yeah.
trying to get some money for this album. Successful.
Yeah, it was successful.
Recorded in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
The tour was great. It was kind of an eye-opener to what this lifestyle is like. And it's a really cool lifestyle because you wake up. When you need to wake up and not when you're required to wake up, you can kind of choose when you want to wake up and then get to the show and play music and then wake up and do it again. And you get paid to do something that you love. And that's what's bizarre to me. And I know to the rest of the band. But yeah, tour was good. And then in December, we launched a Kickstarter campaign, which is Kickstarter, for those that don't know, it's an online fundraising platform. And we set a pretty lofty goal. When you guys think of it was kind of daunting.
It was nerve-wracking.
Yeah,
for
it
sure.
it was daunting for sure, because the last EP we recorded here in Nashville or in Fayetteville was free. It was provided for by an anonymous donor. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, well, we don't really know how much a typical album costs. And so we got quotes for that, and they were huge ballpark figures. So we set our Kickstarter at $10,000, and we're like, you know what, this may work, it may not work. And it ended up working, and it was all fan supported. And so basically the fans paid for us to record this new album, and we think it sounds pretty good.
And how long were you in Nashville working on the album?
We did it all over, was that 1 week?
Well, we recorded one song in like
True.
A weekend.
In October, yeah.
And then we came back and did the other 9 songs in about a week.
Yeah. So I would say probably roughly 2 weeks
okay.
to get the whole thing finished.
All right. And the result was your first full-length album,
yeah.
10 tracks, called Lion's Den.
Yes.
And it came out on the 10th.
10th of March, yeah.
10th of March. So what can you tell me about this new album? Is there any particular theme sort of running to it? When I talked to your cellist in December, he sort of talked about the name of the album.
Yeah. The name Lion's Den, when we launched the Kickstarter, the goal was so high that we were like, is this going to even work? So we kind of equated it to the story of Daniel in the Lion's Den, and like how he probably going in had no idea if he was going to come out alive or not. And we were like, shoot, this is such a huge step for us. Like, what if we don't, what if nothing happens and it just fails? And so luckily we came out of the Lion's Den, and that was the thing. Like, we weren't sure if we were going to make it out, but we did. And we think it sounds really great. And it's got a ton of, it's really different from anything else we've done. And we've got a lot of electric guitars, and it's a really full sound. And that was, our producer helped us really get a fuller sound on this album. So
And that's what makes it kind of different from
yeah,
the EP.
Definitely. There's a lot more presence of things like organs and almost like drony accordion type sounds. And then we've got electric guitars, which is something that was totally new to us.
Mm.
And but we've got songs from really indie rock songs, all the way to one song that may sound a little bit like the Jackson 5. So
what song is that?
We call that one Brothers. And there's some electric guitar that's just reminiscent of I Want You Back by Jackson 5. So a lot of influences on this album, and it's got a lot of different sides to it, and we're really proud of it, though.
Well, there is one song that people will be familiar with. North Carolina is also on this album. It was on your original EP,
yeah.
But you've redone it?
We have.
What was that like to kind of go back and tweak a song you already had?
It was cool. It was a large part of our producer, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, our producer, we played the song for him, and he was like, oh, this sounds good. We like, structurally, this sounds great. We need to, there was some things that we thought would sound better doing it a certain way, so we took out a lot of the super upbeat stomp clap parts and put in a lot of the more beautiful cello lines to kind of highlight the beauty of the song, not necessarily the catchy side of it this time around. So we think it sounds pretty good this way. So.
Well, there's a track on there called Untitled.
Yeah.
And it's all instrumental, I think.
Yeah.
Right? And so how did you guys come up with that one? Because, I mean, you do have a lot of instruments, and
sure,
some of your songs are more instrumental than others, but
right,
they're always singing. And so I thought it was interesting that this one was just instrumental.
Yeah.
Well, we knew going in that we wanted an instrumental track, and we weren't really sure what that looked like going into the studio. And then we just kind of played around with some ideas, and our producers kind of helped us expand on our ideas, and we landed on that, and it's become kind of like a prelude to the song Lion's Den.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just kind of flows into it.
Yeah.
What is there a story that you're telling me with Untitled?
No, it's just, I wish we were more mysterious.
No, I like to ask, you know, if I don't have the words, I want to know if there's something I'm missing.
No.
And I'm sure you want everybody to listen to all the songs on your
of
new
course
album, but is there one or a few that you're most proud of or that you would be most excited to have people listen to and get their reactions?
I think my favorite is Lion's Den. I think it's a really new song for us because we haven't really done anything like that. And the end is just really big and full, and it's got like these gang vocals just kind of singing this anthem, and that just really hits home with me. So
yeah, I would say that was definitely my favorite as well. It's we came into the studio and we were like, Joe, who's our producer, we said, Joe, we want to make this song epic. And I'd kind of written the song based around the story of Les Mis, and so that's where we're like, this song has to be epic, otherwise it's not going to work. And needless to say, it's pretty epic.
What about you two quiet ones in the middle here?
I'd say my favorite song is Old Blues.
That was a good one.
It's got a really backbeat feel on like the drums and bass. And I had the most fun recording that one with John Lewis because we would record drums and bass at the same time.
Yeah.
And so that one's got some nice little upbeat claps. Got some electric riffs on there. It's pretty cool. It's my favorite by far.
Yeah, I'll be the lame mainstream guy and say Brothers. But it gets stuck in your head and you can't stop thinking about it. It's one of those songs you listen to once and you feel like you've heard it for a lifetime. So personally, that's a favorite for me.
Well, following the release of your album, you guys did have a show at George's. How did that go? Kind of, I guess, I don't know if it was your official release party, but kind of your first show since the release.
Yeah, first show, it kind of kicks off our stint of shows that we're playing this spring. We started off here in Fayetteville. The show turned out awesome. Our third time at George's, we had a little over 350 there, and it was an awesome crowd. We had a ton of fun, and we played with a friend band of ours called Jude and the Lion from Nashville, and they killed it, and we had a ton of fun. And this was kind of the kickoff of, I think, six or seven shows that we're about to do this spring and over the next month and a half or 2 months before summer. We're going to Waco next on March 22nd, and then we go to Colorado, Denver, and Fort Collins, and then we play a few other shows around here in April. So we're excited about them.
How are you able to book some of these shows that are not necessarily in our region, and how do you manage to do all of this traveling while you guys are all still at school at the University of Arkansas?
Yeah, it's definitely, I know I speak for all of us when I say it's super tough. Booking wise, you know, it's one of those things. We probably send out 100 emails for every one show that we get. And that might be a little exaggerated, but it's close to truth. And so it's one of those things, like, we just pick a city and we're like, hey, let's try to play here. Look at some venues, see if we know anybody there that has any connections. And luckily for us, a lot of venues have been supportive of helping us find other venues and using those connections. So it's just one of those things. It's kind of a domino effect. And with the presence of the internet and websites like Noise Trade, people can get your album for free. And next thing you know, you have fans in Hawaii that are wanting you to come to a show. And
Do you have fans in Hawaii that want you to come to a show?
We don't have fans in Hawaii.
Okay.
We might have one.
It always surprises me whenever we put something up on the Facebook page, though, like, where do you want us to play? And then there will be people. I think the last time there was someone from Canada that was like, come to Canada.
Yeah.
I was like, how did that happen?
There have been people that from India that are like, come play in India. And we're like, okay. We'll get there soon.
That was Matt Cooper, Andrew Myers, Isaac Foley, and John Lewis Anderson, four of the five members of the local band Little Chief. Their new album, Lion's Den, is available now on iTunes. For more, visit littlechiefband.com. During their recent visit to KUAF, the band also played a couple of songs off their new album, including this one called Gold in the Morning. Again. That was Little Chief performing inside KUAF. You can hear another song from the band Sunday morning at 9 on Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. And that's Hank Mobley in the background along with George Benson on the guitar. We'll hear music from these gentlemen along with Charlie Parker, Oliver Nelson, Bill O'Connell, John Pizzarelli, and much more. Tune in this Friday at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Westville, Oklahoma.
Westville, Oklahoma.
Just right there on the border.
It is. I've driven through it. I believe that's the place I saw some cops in some interesting places. So okay. there's a school zone that the speed limit drops. And fair warning, don't speed through there.
Yeah,
you should never speed through a school zone, but especially be careful there.
Especially in Oklahoma. You never speed in Oklahoma.
No?
No. Mm. That's just kind of, you know, when you're, that's just, yeah, don't speed in Oklahoma.
We are by no way endorsing that you speed anywhere else.
Right, true.
But just be extra careful if you're hitting the road this week, this weekend.
Yeah. Well, and you actually are hitting the road this afternoon.
I'm going to head to Hot Springs and spend some time at the racetrack tomorrow. A group of us go down, about once a year, and it's always a good time and kind of a short spring break since we don't get a full week. But, to everybody on spring break, I hope you have a safe and fun time. Right. I'll be back with Christina Sunday morning for Weekend Ozarks at Large. And then next week we have plenty more stories for you. Christina, you've met back up with Dr. Steinkraus, and we'll have an interesting story next week.
That's right. Yeah, we took a few months off over the winter break, you know, but yesterday, actually, it was a gorgeous day yesterday. Mm-hmm. Sun was out and it was warm, and we went to a creek, Clear Creek, just out past Blessings on 112, mm-hmm. the Blessings Country Club. And we went in search of aquatic insects.
Oh.
So I had on my galoshes and was out waiting in Clear Creek, but it was a perfect day for it. So that story will be on one day next week.
Were there many out yet? I mean, it's just now spring. I assume that these bugs hibernate. I don't really know. But
that's just it. We saw a lot of nymphs, which, you know, they're the babies. So they will eventually turn into dragonflies and damselflies and mayflies and stuff. Oh. But they lay their eggs in the water. So we saw a lot of baby dragonflies.
He always has such interesting ideas. I know nothing about bugs.
Oh, I really don't either, but it's been interesting to learn. I've really learned a lot from him, and he has a great personality, and he's always so prepared. So,
well, I'm looking forward to hearing that next week and next Tuesday. It's last Tuesday, isn't it? Last Tuesday of the month?
It sure is.
Last Tuesday of the month. My days are all jumbled together. Last Tuesday of the month, which means we will have a drama story for you. So earlier this week, I got to go to a rehearsal at Rogers Little Theater. They're getting ready already for another show, The Man Who Came to Dinner. They just wrapped up Les Mis earlier this month, so you can hear that story on Tuesday's edition of Ozarks at Large.
That's right.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large. We will both be back to bring you more stories.
We will. And until then, thank you so much for listening. Have a good Friday.